But Vivienne thought of the time ghosts they had seen beating at the locks, and she knew it soon would be. Most of those people were going to arrive to find that the locks had stopped working. Cousin Vivienne was pointing over the heads of the crowds.
"What's that beautiful place with the blue glass dome?" she said.
"Millennium, dear," said her mother.
"Oh, do let's live in it when we've got the city,"
Cousin Vivienne said. Her father looked rather taken aback.
"I'll think about it," he said.
"Oh, please, let's, Daddy,"
his daughter said, snuggling up to him, as they all went down the steps.
"After all, Mummy's an Icelandic emperor's daughter, and we're both Lees. The Inuit isn't really grand at all."
"We haven't taken over the city yet," Mr. Lee said, laughing, as he turned left towards the gnomon. "But I'll see."
The walk along the avenue was hard going. Everybody else was hurrying the opposite way. The Lees threaded their way through them easily enough, but they did not bother to find a path that gave room for Jonathan, Vivienne, and Sam. They were continually bumped and jostled, and often there was no way they could dodge the people hurrying towards them. And the shaking of the ground seemed worse here. The lacy metal arches were vibrating, giving an unpleasant, blurred feeling when they had to walk under them. Inga Lee kept glancing over her shoulder at something that seemed to be behind Vivienne. She was so obviously nervous that Vivienne began to feel hopeful. By bumping sideways into a fat woman hurrying the other way, Vivienne managed to get herself half turned round before the power of the silver casket pulled her straight again. The Iron Guardian and the Silver Keeper were gliding among the people side by side a few yards behind her. The Iron Guardian's long face was sober. The Silver Keeper's skull face looked grim and sad. Vivienne did not wonder that Inga Lee was nervous of them, but she did not think there were going to be any more help than the evacuees.
"Take no notice," Mr. Lee said soothingly. "They're probably forced to follow wherever the caskets go."
They came to Endless Hill and climbed the steps, to and fro between the ornate balustrades. Every time the steps turned, Vivienne caught a glimpse of a silver figure and a drab one following behind on long, silent feet. "Oh, please let them do something to stop the Lees," she prayed. But when they turned into the last flight, with the tower straight above, the two guardians simply stopped on the landing below the stairs. Vivienne saw them standing there, side by side. By imitating Sam, who had found a way of looking behind under his own arm, her heart sank. Mr. Lee gave a loud, joyous laugh that showed he had been as nervous as his wife.
"You see," he said, "they're quite helpless."
He looked irritably up at the gnomon, standing like a lighthouse, with sky showing through the windows and sunlight dazzling off the midday bell in the pagoda at the top.
"Where's Leon?" he said. "I told him to meet us here."
"That young man is a born double-crosser," Inga Lee said. "I warned you."
"I know," said Mr. Lee. "But we had to have someone to keep watch in Time City in case anyone got suspicious. And you must admit he did a good job enticing the children to find you the silver. And he did set the boy Jonathan up for me to kill when we knew he was getting dangerous."
Again they were talking as if Jonathan was not there, trudging up the steps behind them. Inga Lee said,
"Maybe. But he didn't warn us they were going for the gold first, Viv. Don't trust him."
"I won't," said Mr. Lee. "We'll get rid of him as soon as he shows up."
They went up the last flight of steps, across the platform in front of the tower, and in through its nearest open door. There was an Inuit guard on duty there. He came towards them, beaming all over his wrinkled face.
"Mr. Lee, isn't it?" Welcome back. I thought no one was going to come to the no...
That was all he said. Mr. Lee waved his hat like someone swatting a fly. The guard fell over on his back and lay there, still smiling. None of the Lees took any more notice of him. Mr. Lee stepped to the spiral pillar and went riding up it. His daughter followed him. Inga Lee waved her handbag, and Jonathan was compelled to follow his cousin. After him, Vivian found herself stepping onto the mysterious spiral ledge. Up she went, and to her surprise, found herself stepping out into the bright sunlight of the museum room, through what looked like the solid glass of the pillar. As she did so, Jonathan fell heavily in front of her. Vivian could not stop her own feet from going on walking, and she fell over on top of him. From where they lay in a heap, she could see that there had been a patroller up here, looking after the museum. She was lying against a display case, and her head did not seem to be on straight. Sam was emerging from the pillar. "I didn't know..." he began, and stopped when he saw the patroller. Inga Lee came out of the pillar behind Sam. She must have stopped using the iron casket, because Vivian and Jonathan both found they could move as they wanted. They started to get up. Cousin Vivian dodged out from behind the pillar and kicked them both hard.
"I've been longing to do that," she said. "That's for interfering."
"Stop it, Vivi," Mr. Lee said, not very seriously.
He was carrying a suitcase, and he seemed very pleased about it.
"Look at this, Inga. The silver casket sent all our stuff through right on time. It appeared just as I came up here. Put those three upstairs. I don't want them in the way while we set things up."
Vivian was no sooner back on her feet than she was forced to walk past the first ever automat, through the archway in the wall and up the stairs. When she reached the tall archway leading to the next floor, she found herself turning smartly through it into the bright, bright tinkling space beside the works of the great clock. There nothing seemed to stop her turning round to look at the archway. Sam came through it behind her, puffing hard, with that look a person has who is trying not to cry. Jonathan came after him, and his face was a dull red. Vivian heard Inga Lee's high heels clattering on the stairs, and expected her to come in behind Jonathan. Instead, there was a slight swishing noise. A panel of yellowish stone began sliding across the archway. Jonathan whipped round and tried to put his foot in the gap before it slid home, but he was too late. He clawed at the panel and then kicked it, but it was firmly in place, filling the arch, and he could not budge it. He turned back again. His eyes were staring and strange behind the darkening flicker of his eye function. He said in a queer, strangled voice,
"He killed that patroller himself. She wasn't dead when I came out of the pillar. He knocked her over with the casket and then kicked her head. I tried to stop him, but he just knocked me down with the casket too."
He put his hands over his face, even though his flicker was now black, and turned his back on Sam and Vivian. Sam sat down on the glassy floor.
"He's not my uncle anymore," he said thickly. "And she's not my cousin. I disinherit them."
Vivian stood uncertainly between them until she saw a tear trickle down Sam's cheek. She sat down beside him and patted his shoulder under the slithery mind suit. The mind suits had not done much to help them against the two caskets, she thought. But then look at the layers and layers Inga Lee had worn to protect herself from the Silver Keeper. Sam did not say anything, but he did not shake Vivian's hand off either. Vivian sat there, staring into the twinkling, turning glass heart of the clock, listening to the faint chime and jangle and chinking as it moved, wondering if there was anything they could do now. She did not seem to be able to cry like Sam. Things were too bad for that. She tried not to think of home, or to wonder what had happened to Mum and Dad now that the 20th century had changed so queerly. She tried not to think what would happen to Time City. That was not easy. She could feel the tower shaking, smoothly and constantly, so that she felt almost as if she was riding on a train. And she could see a big dark blot rising slowly up the glass pillar in the middle, turning, turning, and becoming strange shapes as she saw it through different pieces of the glassworks. It took her a moment to realize it was the dead patroller. Then she tried not to follow it up with her eyes. She was glad that Jonathan and Sam were not looking. Time City is going to be a terrible place, with someone like Mr. Lee in charge, she thought, looking firmly at her own knees. That brought her to the thing she wanted most of all not to think of. Suppose Mr. Lee meant them to stay here while the clock struck, and be deaf for the rest of their lives. Try as she would, Vivian kept thinking of that. The myriad glass cogs in front of her kept reminding her of it. The shaking of the tower was causing all sorts of extra glassy noises, jingles and tinks and squeaks, which cut across the regular chiming hum of the works in a way that was urgent and irritating. It got on Vivian's nerves, so that she just had to switch on her clock function to see how near it was to midday. Her wrist lit up, and of course it said 6:10. Their journeys to the Silver Age and then to 20th century had put it completely out of step with Time City. There was no knowing how soon the great clock would strike.
"Oh, blast!" Vivian muttered.
As she said it, the glassworks dimmed to a yellowish twilight. All three of them looked up. The windows were now covered by panels of the same yellowish, translucent stone as the walls. They could hardly tell which was window and which was wall.
"Sealing the tower," Jonathan said. "I'd heard there were shutters for all the doors and windows, but I don't think they've ever been used. Do you think that means there's someone outside and the Lees don't want them to get in?"
They looked at each other with a great deal more hope.
"If you can get in and out of the pillar in the museum room," Jonathan said, "mightn't it work the same here? Do you think there's a way to get through the works of the clock?"
Sam jumped up.
"I'll try. I'm smallest."
"But," said Vivian, thinking of the dead patroller. Then she decided not to say anything. Sam was already crawling nimbly among the nearest huge, sore-edged cogs. He looked as if he would be cut to pieces any second.
"Come back,"
she said feebly.
"Let him go. He might have a chance," Jonathan said. "It's the one good thing left."
He looked up at the high ceiling and more or less howled.
"This is all my fault. Every time I get an idea, I make a complete mess of it. I found them, the silver casket. And on top of that, I went and told Inga Lee where the lead casket is."
"Shut up!"
Vivian snapped. She had to look away from Sam among the glimmering machinery. He was trying to squeeze under a glass rod that kept coming downwards at him, while an enormous disc edged up on him from behind. She turned on Jonathan instead.
"You're being as bad as Elio," she said. "It's not your fault. It's the Lees who've done all this. And no one's got the lead casket yet. You ought to be thinking where it is instead of doing a song and dance like a raving android."
"And the same to you," Jonathan said.
He snatched a look at Sam, who was now edging under a giant elbow of glass, dimly going up and down like a bent piston. In order not to see Sam crushed, he turned to Vivian and said reasonably,
"The lead casket. All we know is that it must be the small egg shape, because the silver one's big. You could see the size from its packing. And we think we know it's attracted to the other caskets."
Here, He and Vivian both had to look at Sam again. He was backing away from a cog like a circular saw, and another, even bigger, was coming sideways at him. The sight sent Jonathan angry.
"But if you know anything that size that gets attracted to the caskets," he snapped, "do please tell me, because I've never seen it."
Sam lay down flat on the glass floor, and both cogs missed him.
"But we have!"
Vivian cried out in a burst of relief.
"We all have! The time egg, the one Elio thought was a dud. It took us after the iron casket a whole 100 years, and it didn't want to take us back to the city."
Jonathan stared at her for an instant. Then he called out,
"Sam, lie there for a moment. It's important. Can you hear us?"
"Only just,"
Sam called back.
"It sort of hums. What do you want?"
"An egg-shaped thing,"
Jonathan called back clearly and precisely.
"Dark grey, about the size to fit in my hand, that gets attracted by the caskets."
Sam's voice boomed among the chiming machinery.
"You mean that old time-lock control? The one that took Elio after the silver and landed him among the bear ladies?"
Jonathan and Vivian clutched one another.
"It is,"
said Vivian.
"Sam,"
Jonathan called carefully,
"that egg is the lead casket. Got that?"
I can't hear,"
Sam said petulantly.
"I thought you said that egg was the lead casket."
"It is,"
Jonathan and Vivian both called. There was a short, humming, tinkling silence. Then Sam called,
"Who do I tell?"
"If you can get out, tell Dr. Willander,"
Jonathan called. He said to Vivian,
"It sounds as if he had an idea what my uncle's like. Who else if Sam can't find him?"
"He oughtn't to tell anyone Mr. Lee used the silver on, just in case,"
Vivian said. And being unable to think of anyone else, she called,
"Mr. Enkian! Mr. Enkian!"
Sam called back.
"All right."
He began wriggling on towards the glass pillar, still lying on his back. After about a foot, his way was blocked by a nest of glass rods, where he had to stand up and sidle round them. Beyond that was a flurry of glass shapes, all working very fast, and beyond those was the pillar. Just as Sam sidled behind the nest of rods, and his pale mind suit became very hard to see, the shutter in the archway slid aside. Cousin Vivian came in, holding the patroller's gun.
"They want you all downstairs now,"
she said. Her skinny arm with its little puffed sleeve looked ridiculous holding the gun. But Vivian and Jonathan had no doubt that she would shoot with it far more readily and ruthlessly than Leon Hardy. They went slowly towards her. Vivian Lee backed against the side of the arch so that she could hold the gun steady with both hands and still see the rest of the dim, tinkling room.
"Where's the other one?"
she said sharply.
"The sticky baby with red hair."
"Sam's hiding in the works," Jonathan said. "If you shoot him, he'll stop the clock."
"It's a suicide mission,"
Vivian said, hoping that this was not true.
"Stupid thing,"
Cousin Vivian said.
"Nothing can stop that clock. Come out,"
she shouted.
"You'll only get squished."
Neither Vivian nor Jonathan could help looking at the place where Sam had last been. And Sam had made it. They saw the faint glimmer of his mind suit slowly rising through the middle of the pillar.
"Then you can stay there and go deaf when the clock strikes. It's 10 to 12 now,"
Cousin Vivian called. She waited a moment in case Sam decided to come out. Vivian and Jonathan looked down at the glass floor in order not to follow the glimmer upwards with their eyes.
"Very well. Stay there,"
said Cousin Vivian. She beckoned with the gun.
"I've got the safety off,"
she said warningly. They had to go past her and down the stairs without another look at the pillar. There are stairs all the way down outside, Vivian thought. He can be out long before the clock strikes. The museum room was almost as dim and yellowish as the room above. All the windows were shuttered except for the one that looked directly out over the Avenue of the Four Ages. There the museum cases had been pulled aside, and Cousin Vivian's parents were setting up some kind of apparatus in the space. The two caskets had been put in the niches. Vivian could see them, first dark and distorted by the glass, and then clear and in plain view as the pillar went slowly round. One flattish iron box, a little rusty, and one large silver egg on which pearls and red stones gleamed from world settings.
"I only got two,"
Cousin Vivian said.
"The other one got in the clock."
Ingerly turned round.
"The small one. He could be small enough to get into the pillar," she said nervously.
Without bothering to turn round, Mr. Lee said,
"It won't make any difference if he does. I put the shutters down in the Bell Pagoda. All he'll get is a bad attack of deafness. Nobody's going in or out of this tower. And we won't need Sam until later. Bring those two over here, Vivi. I need them now."
"Why do you need us?"
said Jonathan.
"Shut up,"
said Mr. Lee. He said it as if he meant it. Vivian and Jonathan went over to the window without daring to say anything else.
"Stand there,"
Mr. Lee said, shoving them to one side of it.
"And remember, the only use you are to me is as hostages. So keep quiet until the clock strikes and the gold casket gets here. I may let you go, then."
"Why do you need Sam later?"
Jonathan said.
Mr. Lee laughed.
"Well, to continue the Lee line," he said. "You won't mind a deaf husband, will you, Vivi?"
Vivian could not see Cousin Vivian's face from where she stood backed against the bay of the window, so there was no telling what she thought. Beside her, Jonathan was chewing the end of his pigtail. Vivian was sure he was thinking about Sam waiting beside a dead patroller to be deafened. There was no way out of the pagoda except by the outside stairs, and from what Mr. Lee said, it seemed as if there was a shutter between Sam and the stairs.
"Ah, here they come,"
said Mr. Lee.
"The fools have smelt a rat at last."
Vivian craned across Jonathan. A group of patrollers and other people were hurrying up the zigzag steps to the gnomon. Mr. Donegal was bounding up in front. Vivian saw Sempertern Walker near the back, beside Dr. Leonoff, the high scientist, and the great purple figure of Dr. Willander towering in the middle. Scattered people were hurrying behind, trying to catch up. Patrollers and Inuit guards, mostly. But one of them was Petula, and another looked like Ramona. And a long way in the rear, rushing down the middle of the Avenue of the Four Ages, was Mr. Enkian, with his robes flying.
"That android's with them, beside Willander,"
Ingerlee said.
"I thought we'd made them lock it up."
"Must have got loose and alerted the rest," said Mr. Lee. "Well, they're not much of a threat. I must say I expected them to be better organized than this."
Vivian suspected that Mr. Donegal was better organized than Mr. Lee thought. There were movements in among the bushes beyond the stairs that looked like more people keeping out of sight while they got Endless Hill surrounded. While she was trying to see if there were indeed patroller uniforms creeping through the shrub, she heard a faint scuttering. It was outside the tower, from above somewhere. Jonathan's head moved slightly and then stopped, stiffly, showing he had heard it too. It couldn't be a trailing shoelace, Vivian thought. Sam's feet had been enclosed in that mine suit, but it did sound very much like one. And the scuttering was coming round the wall and getting lower, where the Lees might hear it at any moment. She looked at Mr. Lee. He was smiling and holding a small round piece of metal to his mouth. He spoke into it.
Stop.
His voice blared from outside the tower.
None of you come any nearer. This is Viv Lee speaking, Abdul.
The people coming up the stairs faltered, their faces turned up to the window, but none of them quite stopped climbing.
I have told you to stop,
Mr. Lee's voice blared.
We have taken possession of the Gnomon, and we have two of the so-called polarities of Time City up here with us. We will not hesitate to turn the force of the polarities on anyone who comes any nearer. Get off the steps.
The group on the stairs stopped. They did not seem to be quite as well organized as Vivian hoped. They were turning to one another, asking one another for something. She listened hard in the silence, but she could not hear the scuttering any more. Then a patroller climbed over the stone balustrade beside Mr. Donegal and put something into his hand. They heard his voice as if he was speaking from right beside them.
Viv, you're mad. What are you trying to do up there? I'm taking over Time City.
Mr. Lee blared.
It will come to a halt at the end of time in 6 minutes from now. When it does, the gold casket and the lead casket will be brought to the Gnomon. I warn you not to interfere with those caskets in any way. Get off the steps.
Viv, I think we should talk about this.
Mr. Donegal's voice suggested quietly from beside Mr. Lee's shoulder.
Do as I tell you,
Mr. Lee blared.
I have hostages here. I shall start by shooting one of them to show I mean business.
He nodded to his daughter. She prodded the gun into Vivian's arm, and then Jonathan's, and pushed them out in front of the window, where the group of upturned faces could clearly see them. Mr. Lee took the gun from his daughter and waved it so that they could see that, too. Vivian felt unreal. It was like that first night in patrol building. She felt as if she was in a film. And perhaps that's merciful, she thought.
Do you see them?
Mr. Lee blared.
Do I shoot one?
There was more confusion among the group. Heads turned, arms waved, beckoning to the stragglers hurrying up the flight of steps below. Mr. Donegal's voice said irritably,
I know he's violent, and that wife of his...
And this was followed by a click as he turned his loudspeaker off and waved everyone towards the side of the steps. In an untidy sort of stampede, everyone hurried to the balustrade and bundled themselves, and one another over it, into the bushes. Jonathan's teeth crunched on his pigtail. Elio was still standing there, a small, pale figure in his mind suit. The two guardians were advancing down the steps towards him, one a long silver glitter, and the other tall and dull brown, casting dim, not quite real shadows across Elio and dwarfing him completely.
Inga, snapped Mr. Lee. Get what those things are saying to one another, quickly.
He held the gun against Jonathan's head, and neither Jonathan nor Vivian dared to move. Their eyes turned sideways to watch Inga Lee fiddling with knobs on top of her apparatus. There was a noise like an army marching through tin foil. Out of it, Elio's voice said faintly,
The lead casket.
As soon as he said it, Elio turned and leapt over the side of the steps into the bushes. The two guardians glimmered out of sight, leaving two long, faint eye blots on the stairs.
I think those creatures set up some kind of interference,
Inga Lee said irritably.
I can't pick up what they're saying in the bushes at all.
Well, at least the steps are clear for the other two guardians,
Mr. Lee said. He passed his daughter the gun and turned to help his wife. There was more tin foil crunching from the machine. A voice that might have been Elio said,
"We could not discover."
"Where will the other guardians come from?"
Cousin Vivian asked.
"A time lock, at the bottom of the steps. Don't interrupt," said her father.
At that point, Mr. Enkian, who was clearly not much of a runner, reached the bottom of the steps. He leant on the balustrade to pant before taking the climb, and Vivian saw a small figure come towards him round the hill at a tired, rolling trot. It was Sam. She recognized him mostly by the trot, because most of him was a fluttering, shapeless bundle. His mind suit seemed to have got shredded into 1,000 trailing strips. Jonathan Delbow went into her side. They both did what they could to distract the Lees.
"I'm hungry," Jonathan said. "That automat over there still works."
"Does it?"